The Lab takes the ethereal to the practical. Our podcast acts like a business school case study for private equity professionals, CEOs, operating partners, and chief transformational officers. We all know transformation is the key to differentiated alpha. Here's how you actually do it. Our audience tunes in to learn from those in the field, getting their fingernails dirty and driving meaningful growth through better operations, technology, and data. We learn from going to business school, teaching at business schools, and applying these lessons in the real world that case studies actually help the insight stick better. Come join us.
Well, welcome to The Lab, the value creation in private equity. We're excited to kick off this podcast series with you, Al. Al, you know, obviously you represent the nuanced vision around value creation that we developed almost a decade ago. The background being the private equity community has evolved and matured over time. Financial engineering being less of a differentiated value lever to pull. Effectively, everyone's gone to the same business school and learned the most efficient way to process and structure M&A transactions. Today, we believe the real value is driven by operational change and improvement. And this plan can be laid out before an asset is purchased, all the better. This is something that, Al, you've seen before, and you can determine where to look for these differentiated opportunities to generate growth and margin improvement, and then actually go and deliver real operational value. How do you do that?
Hi, Scott. Happy to be with you here today. And Scott, I think whenever you're evaluating an asset, you need to take a look at the rest of the industry and the adjacent industries and find the best in class and then benchmark the target asset indicators against the best in class. So I'm going to look at growth versus market, growth margin versus market, operating margin versus market. But that would just be a snapshot. To really determine the opportunity, you need to dig deeper to understand the why of the opportunity. At a basic level, are there accounting differences between the target and the benchmark? Is the target providing a differentiated value proposition to its customer client base? And you need to evaluate the management culture of the target versus your benchmarks. How is the culture of the target affecting the performance of the target?
Well, that's great. Look, that kind of was the benchmark of this conversation, right? But before we jump in any further, tell us about yourself. What's your background? How'd you become a transformation leader? And most importantly, share, how do you define the role?
Well, I actually started my career in tax, CPA with a master's degree in taxation. Ultimately, I decided to move on from tax and I became a divisional CFO for companies like Schering Plow, Tyco International, most recently AmerisourceBergen. I was asked by Amerisource to become their chief transformation officer because Amerisource decided to fully integrate their specialty market business into their full line wholesale business. Given the relationships I had built and my deep knowledge of those businesses, I was a natural choice to take on that transformation. So I've been in a transformation role since about July of 2017. And I've been with a large technology distributor since January of 21. Regarding the role, Nick, the chief transformation officer's job is to question, to challenge, to reward, to push, and to necessarily create a sense of stress to an organization that needs to think and act differently. The role needs to create discomfort because large-scale change is not comfortable for anyone. If you cannot create a certain level of discomfort in the organization, you can't effectively do the job. But the CTO cannot take the place of the CEO. The CEO must be front and center in driving the change, continuously reinforcing the idea that this is the CEO's transformation. The CTO needs to be a respected member of the CEO staff. The CTO cannot be afraid of confrontation, and the CTO has to be willing to challenge the corporate status quo.
Well, listen, when we think about placing top talent into roles, I mean, we think about building a scorecard and they have to have these various capabilities. I mean, what do you think the most critical attributes are of a good transformational leader?
Scott, I think there are several. I jokingly say all the time, I'm a part-time psychologist, I'm a part-time cultural anthropologist, and I'm a change agent. So what do I mean by that? Well, change is difficult. Influencing change requires the ability to understand all of the individual biases in the room. You also need to understand the culture of the business you are in and the natural human responses to the changes you're trying to affect. You need to have the operational and financial acumen to understand where the opportunities really are and where they are not. I would say the biggest challenge that I think all transformation leaders face is the ability to build trusting relationships with the rest of the management team and support their success without them perceiving that you're stepping on their toes while executing on the transformation program. Building that trust can take time and requires a lot of patience from the transformation leader.
There's a lot of tiptoeing there. That's a balancing act, right? So now that we know what the role is and the attributes to be successful, let's shift to actions on, because that's what we want to know. What are some of the things that a good transformational leader must do to be successful?
Nick, I think there are three things. You have to be able to optimize the core of the business first. This would be accomplished on the one hand by driving much more efficiency and effectiveness on the cost side, on the SG&A line. You also need to look at opportunities for overall growth and margin expansion. You need to be able to optimize the operating model to fit the strategic directive of the business. But I would say the most importantly, you have to be able to manage risk. Risk in execution and risk in not executing. You've got to be able to measure your performance against these three components so that you're in a position to course correct when you're not attaining the desired results.
Well, you know, one of the things that the beauty and the curse of the world we live in private equity is you can't fix what you can't measure. So it's helpful to measure all these things. But what are some of the other like non-tangible success factors that a good transformational leader needs to drive?
Scott, ultimately, if you cannot win the hearts and minds of your team as to why the change is needed, you'll not be able to move forward. Change begins between the ears. First thing that has to change is the way you think about your business. You need to be able to explain and convince the team why their individual contributions to the success of the transformations are so important and what is ultimately in it for them to drive the change and be successful. Change management is a core competency of all transformation offices. Ultimately, the change has to be driven by the CEO of the company. The CEO has to be seen as what I call the CCA, or the chief change agent. And the transformation officer must be seen as the CEO's delegate for driving that change. Without that leadership from the CEO, the CTO will be left on an island and be ineffective. The CTO needs to help the CEO develop a culture of continuous change and improvement, because at the end of the day, no company can afford to stand still even for a minute.
Sounds like there's a development of a collaborative vision in order to execute any of these strategies and really to deploy a CTO effectively. My biggest question is, where do you start and how do you begin to drive that transformational change for the company? And a little caveat, how do you make sure that you're the right fit for that CEO?
Every transformation begins like any other business initiative. You have to develop a vision statement for where you want to take the company. Doing that requires having a clear understanding of your desired outcomes and developing action-oriented goals. Building that vision requires you to build a case for change, which requires you to be able to support your vision with quantitative and qualitative data sets. You must be able to show your team what the setbacks are of maintaining the status quo. As it relates to being the right fit, I would say, given the complexities of the role of being a CTO, I think that both sides, whether it's the CTO or the business that's looking for the CTO, really needs to evaluate the cultural fit and the stylistic agility of the CTO. I say a CTO has to have the stylistic agility and the cultural agility to adapt and change to changing environments within the business. And if you can do that, then I think you can be relatively successful in creating a good match.
The good news is that's not easy. So let's assume that you actually do find the CTO and the CEO, and there's a good match and a good culture, and you bring different things to the table. Great. And then you get going to Nick's point. How do you maintain it? How sustainability is like very hard to do, because if change is hard, no one likes it. How do you make sure you stay on the path?
Rule number one, you've got to get quick wins. You've got to get quick wins on the board. You need to broadly communicate those wins to everyone. And you need to develop a reward system for those quick wins. You need to develop a diverse group of change champions for that transformation. Those champions will help drive the desire for the change deeper and deeper into the organization. The desired change won't happen if it's not happening on the ground floor of the business. And then on the communication front, further on that, you need to establish various channels of communication for your success stories so that you can help sustain the enthusiasm for the change programs. In my experience, the more varied the communication channels are, the more success you will have in building the enthusiasm for the program. I've used email blasts, video interviews with the CEO, intranet blogs, and virtual town halls have been very successful.
So then what do you think? I mean, you obviously have a game plan that works. You've had multiple successes with it. It's driven true value at big numbers. What do you think the biggest challenges are when you're driving these programs?
Yeah, this is where things get challenging and difficult for the management team. You know, I mentioned earlier the need to build trusting relationships with the rest of the management team. But I think another major challenge to call out would be that you must identify and prioritize the management of the detractors in your organization, the detractors to the transformation program. If you don't manage the detractors effectively, they will become derailers and they will either impede or significantly slow down your success. The harsh reality is that if you cannot turn your detractors into champions or at least passive enthusiasts, you may need to make some tough decisions. In my experience, being efficient in managing the detractors has been instrumental in getting the program off the ground. I would add that anticipating obstacles and getting leverage from the wider organization to overcome those obstacles can be challenging as well. I often use the term metaphorically for the transformation office being an air traffic controller. TO needs to ensure that all the planes are taking off and landing on time, no failure. So anticipating obstacles is what I call the early warning system that you need to build in order to anticipate the challenges on execution before they can derail an initiative.
Yeah, so we've reiterated here, it takes a team, and I love the change champion that you mentioned earlier. Are you looking for allies as soon as you're landing in that new company? I mean, of course you're trying to build a composition of your team, right? But is there a certain role that you're looking to connect with beyond the CEO?
Well, you must first identify who are the top leaders in the organization that will help you drive this change, who will champion this and rock beside you. As I mentioned a few seconds ago, you also have to identify the ones that are going to try to resist this change. And both are equally important. As it relates to the composition of a team, which I, you know, obviously I can't do all of this by myself, I need to put together an organization, not a large organization, but I need to put together an organization that becomes the foundation of the transformation office. And I need a people leader to help me with change management. I need a process leader to run the day-to-day operations of the transformation office. I need a finance leader to ensure accurate financial tracking of the program results. I need a communications leader, and I need an IT leader. Many of our initiatives, in my experience, are IT enabled. It doesn't matter whether the organization is direct reporting into the TO or matrixed in. It's worked both ways for me. If you're running a global program, I think you've got, if you've got regional business units, you know, you probably want to carbon copy that structure regionally, but with all, you know, developing a regular cadence of interface with the central global CTO. And you want one source of truth for the TO program. So the central office needs to lead the program globally, establish the tone of leadership for the other regional offices, and consolidate and report the global results to the corporate finance team and CEO staff. One source of the truth.
So this is a challenging role. Let's make it a little bit more challenging and let's align with private equity. Okay. So where do the PE firms fit into this, into deploying a TO? Because I imagine you're probably aligning with operating partners as they are creating their value creation playbook, but that's just my assumption.
you're correct that there needs to be an alignment between the transformation office and the operating partners. But my real word of caution here is you cannot approach the deployment of a CTO in any organization with a one-size-fits-all approach. Every asset is unique, and the approach to the value creation needs to be customized to best fit the needs of the business. Nick, the unfortunate truth is that 70% of all transformations fail. If you want to be in that 30%, being in that 30%, it requires you ensuring that you're focused on what's most important now, what's important in the medium term, and then the longer term. I do believe that having a CTO aligned with the operating partners when developing the value creation plan is best practice. However, the timing doesn't always work out that way, where you can sequentially accomplish that. In my most recent experience, the value creation plan was actually designed before I was brought on board, but it can still be incredibly successful.
It's hard enough to do all the things you've done, and the problem with a CTO job is if you do your job, you work yourself out of a job to some degree because you helped deploy that transformation. Now you can do it again, of course, but how do you ensure that there's sustainability of the results that are derived from this transformation program?
Yeah, there clearly is a playbook and a technique to this. And I would say on the tactical side, generating value from an initiative is not enough to actually deem the initiative complete. Depending on the type of initiative, each initiative needs to be monitored for sustainability for a certain period of time. In my experience, cost reduction initiatives need to be monitored for at least 3 months, and margin expansion initiatives need to be monitored pretty much through the life of the program and adjusted as necessary given the market to ensure that you're not taking credit for market dynamic conditions versus actual real initiatives that you're pursuing on the pricing front, as an example. But these are tactics. The most important thing to sustaining the initiative value, it needs to happen in the front process of determining which initiatives really are going to drive value and change your business for the long run. And the more you pressure test that upfront, the more success you're going to have in sustaining the results. But at the end of the day, it's the management team. Continuing to drive the execution of the enhancements to the operating model that has to be implemented through the program. The management team has to continue to drive that sustainability.
Yeah, I mean, it's executing a plan and it's continuing to execute that plan and that strategy, right? Look, there are a lot of firms that you can partner with to help drive this sustainable, transformative value. A resource of we're driving digital transformation through strategic IT sourcing, you touched on the IT leadership, and that's really where we're focused. For those that offer different third-party solutions to creating value, what's the best way to catch their eye and then partner with a CTO or operating partner?
Nick, I think a rigorous cadence of interactions with private equity firms as they're developing their target strategies is the right timing early on, and possibility also of corresponding with a CTO at that point in time. But the real opportunity for the third-party solutions provider is in support of the development of the value creation plan. Because that way, those solutions can be incorporated into the plan. So that's critical to me. I think that understanding where the private equity is going directionally from a target perspective is very important. But then staying engaged as they're moving forward the development of the value creation plan is critical.
Well, I mean, sort of what we're thinking about for us at Landcore, we're on the one hand trying to determine should a PE firm buy an asset? Should we partner with them and help them? And then does there need to be an augmentation of the team? Obviously, I'm biased to think you are a great CTO because I've seen you before, during, and after a process, and it has driven meaningful returns and improvements. But when you complete one of these transformation programs, you know, what's next? You know, if someone says, oh, I think a CTO is interesting, you could keep doing it and do it throughout the life cycle of various assets. And what are your thoughts are once you've proven success and that CTO job has been declared victorious?
Well, I would say that first and foremost, I think that increasingly I'm witnessing in almost practically every industry, a chief transformation officer capability is in situ indefinitely. Now, why is that? Because yes, it's incredibly important for a transformation program to have separate, distinct, and time-determined programs that have a beginning and have an end. But there are new programs that are needed every day that need to be started and finished. I'll give just a few examples off the top of my head. Almost every company right now is going through a massive digital transformation. I would argue every company is an IT company today. ESG. It's going to create new challenges for all companies for the next 10 years and much longer. I think a good CTO can help a company navigate through all of these emerging challenges. I think a good CTO will help an organization find opportunities to unlock new value continuously and work with the management team to unlock it. A close partnership between the CTO and the strategic leader of a business, I think, is critical because the CTO can help operationalize the strategy of a business when they want to go out and pursue new directions. So I think, you know, to be a little, add a little levity to it, you know, I used the term air traffic controller for the transformation office earlier. There are always going to be planes taking off and landing. I don't think anyone can afford to really sit still at any point in time.
Well, yeah, to follow that up, I mean, you give an M&A professional a chance to do a deal, they'll do a deal. Who cares if it's a borderline irresponsible purchase price multiple? So hopefully what you're doing and what we've talked about today is how do you actually drive meaningful change throughout that ownership period of an asset? PE firms need to do it all the time. And listen, Al, it's great to partner with you. Nick and I are excited to do this and have you be the kickoff of the lab because it's all about creating, you know, creating value within this private equity ecosystem. You've done it before. You're going to continue to do it. We're excited to have you be part of this. And let's see where we go from here. Thanks.
Thank you, Scott and Nick. It's been a pleasure talking to you today.
Thanks, Al. Hope you guys enjoyed that. Scott, you know, the very first thing I thought about as we're talking to Al is this a new trend that we're going to be seeing? And I think there's no better person than to ask you. You're placing executives around the globe. Are we seeing an uptick in the chief transformational officer as we push forward in this path of digital transformation?
Well, listen, I think we are. I think it started, it used to be financial engineering that got you a great return, and that was lovely. But, you know, as we've said, everyone's gone to the same business schools and figured that out. So that's less of a, you know, again, a differentiated approach to driving value. So, and then we have the trend of there's a lot of operating partners out there that are, you know, tasked with actually producing, helping produce the returns that everyone agreed to when they decided to buy the company. Transformation officers are in the asset and they're actually the tip of the spear helping drive that. And so we've seen a substantial uptick in putting that chief transformation officer into the portco. A, it's a portfolio company expense, not a GP expense like an operating partner often is. And so that's helpful for lots of reasons. And that person is there to help drive real return. And so, you know, most of the private debt professionals are really good at doing deals. They may not be as good at operational, you know, getting their fingernails dirty. And that's what a CTO is doing. And so we've seen a lot more of that in assets that are 5 and 10 of EBITDA and some of the ones we've been talking about that are, you know, billion plus. So it's the same problem, large or small. You need to actually improve the assets to get the returns that you promised the LPs.
I love that. And look, I think for the most part, everyone we're talking to, listening to this, are they're very familiar with the operating partner model. But like you said, for the PE firms that may not have that, and they need a resource for a portfolio company to have a professional in there and able to execute on the strategic initiatives and the goals, you know, post-close of and sometimes in the diligence phase of that PE firm is so important because where I hear some of the biggest challenges when I'm talking to operating partners, it's human capital, it's getting the right people in the right seats, and actually being able to execute on that big strategic vision, right? And it sounds like that's what Al is born and bred to do, and that's what this role is there to do. Like, I think it works best as an extension of that operating partner model, but also I think there's probably going to be instances where if this is really embraced by PE, any type of private equity firm can really deploy this resource in as a force multiplier for their strategic value creation.
Yeah, listen, you have to have someone who has a meaningful EQ-IQ combination. You can't be viewed as a sneaky spy for the private equity firm. You have to be viewed as a trusted partner for the C-suite. And so that's where, and listen, operating partners have a meaningful dose of that as well, this EQ-IQ combination. So you know, a lot of the folks dip in and out. Sometimes they'll, you know, be an operating partner and they'll deploy into an asset. Sometimes that's fine, but then you're not allowing them to touch a bunch of assets, which you can do as a member of an operating partner and part of the GP. So I think it's an evolution like everything else we're doing. Listen, you and I are trying to, when we're delusional with ourselves, we're trying to change the world of M&A a little bit. How do we be helpful? And we're doing that in a variety of different ways. And, you know, folks like Al and other folks that are upcoming on these different podcasts are playing an important role in driving that value creation.
Yeah, exactly. And lastly, I just want to touch on, you touched on how it, you have to have that split of EQ, IQ, right? That perfect blend. It sounds like this role, especially, man, you got to be able to be a leader of leaders. You have to be able to really connect with the C-suite, come in there and be their force multiplier, be their augment as much as anything, because this is a, you know, he said, you're looking for change. And to drive change, that is a, you've done it, I'm sure, I've done it a ton. When you're going in there, that is such a vulnerable time for a business. You know, it's usually right in an inflection point of growth. They're looking for a change, and a lot of the time, you know, they're looking to change their business, not only just change their culture and how they're executing. So I think it is a very ambitious role, and I think Al gave us a very good understanding of the challenge, but also what the upside is, you know?
I think that's right, and I feel like the best, we placed, you know, a large number of these transformation officers in private equity portfolio companies. The best ones, to your point, ask, listen, Scott, is the private equity firm forcing this down the CEO's throat, or is the CEO on board? And that's an important distinction, because sometimes CEO will say, listen, I got this. I just need someone to execute what I say. And sometimes the CEO will say, I need a partner here, someone who'd think about where we are, where we want to go, and has seen different movies than me. How do I make sure that the CEO is on board with this role? And so that's important. And so that's what we look for, because quite frankly, if the CEO is not, it's not a role we're going to take on, because it's going to reduce the effectiveness of this particular role in the value creation that we're all, you know, embedded with and sort of invested in, because we're investing in these opportunities. So you're right. And that's an important thing to think about.
Yep. We're here to create value, not create friction at the end of the day, right? So hopefully you guys enjoyed that. We'll be back again next week with another very hot button topic, which is digital transformation. So we'll be back next week.